We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 238. And I think we just rename it the rain delay, rain out doubleheader scheduled for later in the season just because screw you Yankees podcast. What's up,
Scott? It's absolutely ridiculous. You know, the fact that these guys are playing so many doubleheaders. I was joking about it after one of the postgame videos, but now, again, today, at least they called it early enough for everybody to at least, you know what they were going to do if people were going to the game or whatever. I mean, it was called pretty early, so the radar had to have been pretty bad. It's getting insane how many games, how many less games we've played than everybody else.
Six. They've played six fewer games than the Red Sox. The Red Sox are playing Sunday Night Baseball tonight against the Astros, so that's not going to be weather issue considering it's a dome in Houston. But yeah, as of Monday, they've played six fewer games, which is a lot to have to make up.
It really is. It's a lot. It's a lot of games. And, you know, they're going to be sandwiched in weird places and at weird times, and it's not going to be a good thing for the New York Yankees. And I know we're going to bitch a little bit about this because this is the one thing that really bothered me badly is the stupid ESPN game and them getting flexed to a ESPN game with a doubleheader the next day. I mean, what are you doing here? This is ridiculous. When it rains, it pours, literally. And now ESPN's going to make us play three games in less than 24 hours? Something's got to be done. This is bullshit.
It's a conspiracy against the evil empire, New York Yankees.
Yeah, I'm not having this.
And everyone's saying, like, well, at least the doubleheaders are going to be, obviously, they have the one on Monday against Detroit. Detroit's not a good team. Then Baltimore. Baltimore's garbage, as we saw this weekend. Doesn't matter who you're playing. Doubleheaders are tough. It's very hard to sweep doubleheaders, especially when you have to play this many of them.
You have to play a lot. Obviously, within the two games, so you're really taxing your pitching staff. You're putting more pressure on the starter to get deeper into games, which they don't because there's only one guy on our staff who can go deep into a game. But then, you know, the bullpen, I understand you get an extra guy, but you're still putting a lot of pressure on position players going out there doing things, you know, not used to, not what they're normally used to. And then you have pitchers going out there throwing more. It's just, it's taxing. It's on a body from a guy who's playing all summer long. Like, these guys play enough games as it is. You know, stacking them like this just makes it that much harder. And you know, can absolutely lead to some kind of a freak injury or something. It's just, they're just not good situations to have all the time.
Can you imagine if this was happening to, like, the 2015 Yankees, the old broken-down Yankees? It would be game over for them. At least these Yankees are young and spry.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, at least they have some young bones to do this. In 2015, it wouldn't have mattered, but it's like, okay. But yeah, no, it's just, you know, it's the man trying to keep us down. I'm not happy with this. Yeah,
you mean Mother Nature.
I'm not happy about this.
Yeah, just quickly. So because of the Thursday rainout, the Yankees are playing July 9th, doubleheader against the Orioles. That means 11 games in 10 days leading up to the All-Star break. And then the Sunday rainout is a Saturday, August 25th doubleheader, which means they play 14 games in 13 days at the end of August, early September. And like we talked about at the beginning of the season, so many rainouts, they're not playing consistently. It's all going to catch up to them at the end when they're not having off days when they should have off days, or they're having all of these games in such a condensed period of time. They're going to really have to rely on their depth at that point, which we understand is a very big strength of this team. It might be the best depth in all of Major League Baseball, but it's going to be tested.
Yeah, and that's one of the very good parts about the way that this team is constructed. They are kind of built to handle something like this, even though not many teams should have to handle something like this. But you can't control when the heavens open up. But the fact that the Yankees do have so many different position players that can play different positions. I mean, from the beginning, Aaron Boone and the Yankees have really stressed flexibility in the way if you can play multiple positions, you're more of a valued asset, I think, at that point. And, you know, you're seeing that all over the Yankees. You're seeing the depth in the bullpen. We've had guys like Jonathan Holder has come in and just really stepped up and filled the shoes of some of these guys that have been on the DL. So theoretically, yes, the Yankees can handle it. But again, you don't want to push it too far and find out if you can't. You know, you just don't want to get to that point. And they very well could with the amount of games that they're going to have to play.
All right, a couple housekeeping items before we get into everything. So the June 29th event against the Red Sox, that is quickly approaching. We are now in the month of June. $84 gets you a ticket in section 205 or 206. You get a t-shirt, and the pregame party is going to be at the dugout with beer specials. And this is a really good deal because I was looking on StubHub today, and the cheapest ticket in the section we're going to be sitting in is $135. And just to get in the gates right now, if you want to go to that game, it's over $60. And that's for like nosebleed tickets. So this is a really good deal we've got here.
Yeah, absolutely. And the shirt's going to be sent out to everybody ahead of time, just like we did for the last one. That actually worked out really well. Everybody got their shirts on time, well ahead of schedule. And this, the fact that you're in 20, it's most likely going to be section 205. That's kind of where we've been. And $84 for a Friday night Red Sox game. It's a premium game, so that's why it's more than the majority of our other, we have a couple premium games, but they're all a little bit more expensive than the regular ones. But again, it's a hell of a deal. They're a lot of fun. We're going to have the video coming out of the last one. I had a videographer at the last one, and he's going to, hopefully this week, we should have a couple different videos of the event so you guys can see it and get all hyped up and then go buy your tickets and save some money. If you do go to another game that weekend, you can actually go to SeatGeek because buying tickets can be complicated and confusing, but there's a better way, and that's with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets for every type of event, whether you are searching for a last-minute deal or planning a night out with your friends or need the perfect gift. SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like being there in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone, and it's by far the easiest way to shop for tickets. I can be anywhere in just a few taps. I can instantly get tickets. I actually use SeatGeek to buy the tickets to spring training, and obviously we had a phenomenal time. It's designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever. SeatGeek saves you money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. You get more bang for your buck. SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value and help you immediately identify the best seats to fit your budget. Best of all, listeners of the Bronx Pinstripe Show get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app, enter promo code Bronx today. That's promo code Bronx for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase.
So I know that we were just bitching about the weather and about the schedule, all the doubleheaders, and I think that's legit to complain about because it's been an unbelievable amount of bad luck the Yankees have had with the scheduling. But one thing I think fans need to stop complaining about is that the Red Sox have had an easier schedule than the Yankees. You've seen people bitching about this?
Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
I mean, it's something to lean on when they were in that long hit winning streak. It was fun to point at the fact that they didn't play anybody.
Right. And it's also was even more of the reason that for Yankees to buy into this team when they were going on that unbelievable run against teams like Houston and the Red Sox and a ton of other good teams. So that was great. But the reality is the American League sucks, except for the four teams at the top, Yankees, Red Sox, Houston, and Cleveland. If you want to throw Cleveland in there, they haven't had the success that we expect them to have this season, but we still think they're a top team. The rest of the league is pretty much garbage. You got Seattle, Oakland, Angels are all kind of hovering around, maybe competing for that second wild card spot, but over half the league is bad. So most of the time, you're going to be playing a bad team.
Yeah, there's definitely, I mean, we're going to hit a point in our schedule where it's going to be a lot easier, and there's going to be a lot of these teams that are just no good. So we already expect how many wins against the Devil Rays? Is it 19, 18? How many times we played?
And
them?
Hey, we were mocking the Devil Rays. They're 500. They're third in the division. They're bullpenning their way to third in the division.
Bullpenning my ass. We haven't talked about this yet. Nathan Eovaldi coming up and throwing six no-hit innings.
I know.
Did you see the replay of him digging in his glove?
I did not.
There's some zoomed in replays of him digging in his glove. He is definitely going for something in there.
You know what's amazing though? I looked, 70 pitches in six innings.
Yeah. Hey, he's dare I say target at the trade deadline right there. Nathan Eovaldi. I hope he does well because he seemed to be turning a corner when before he got hurt. He was pitching better and he's always been one of those guys that I still thought he pitched pretty well when he was with the Yankees. He wasn't overly terrible. He did throw a lot of pitches.
Same thing every time. It was five innings, 100 pitches, one or two runs.
That's the thing. Like now, if we look at what's happening now, these guys are still throwing the same amount of pitches and getting into the fifth and sixth. So it's the same thing. But at least he wasn't giving up any damn runs.
Wouldn't we take that out of Sonny Gray right now?
Absolutely. Like, I would take it all day long. So in the same game, we had Nathan Eovaldi throwing a no-hitter and get pulled in the sixth inning, and Rob Refsnyder hitting a three-run shot. It was like, I don't know how to handle this.
You must have needed a towel after
it was ridiculous. And it was after the Yankees had finished, so it was a 10 o'clock game.
Yeah, and then
so I was
finished.
Able to see some of it. The nice thing is that we are going to be playing a lot of these teams that obviously we've been playing some of the good teams in the American League. We haven't played a lot of these bottom feeding teams. We will play a lot of them in the American League East with the Devil Rays, with the Orioles, who have just
ton of games in June against the Rays.
So that's good. And you know, if the Yankees could take advantage of those, we're gonna see some gaps put between either if the Red Sox continue their play, or it's just gonna be a big gap between whoever that second wild card team is, and then, you know, the Yankees and the Red Sox will fight it out for the division. That's gonna be the interesting I think that's gonna be the most interesting chase at the end.
Yes. Well, what's also amazing is that both the Yankees and Red Sox are on pace for like 108 wins. It's crazy.
Yeah.
What, I don't think I've ever seen two teams, in at least since in the modern era. Maybe it happened in 1919 or something stupid, but that has not happened in recent memory.
Well, the other the thing about them right now, too, is they're definitely going through some adversity. Mookie Betts is down.
Yeah, and he was having an MVP season.
Absolutely. Pedroia is back. I mean, did he even make it back, or was he hurt
a couple
in rehab?
Games.
Yeah, so he's going back on there. So, you know, they're going to be going through some stuff. Let's see if they lose some games. But, you know, the Yankees are playing out of their minds right now, and they just need to continue it. As long as we can get on the field and play baseball, have some grown men throwing the ball back and forth, we'll be fine.
And maybe another thing that the Yankees will luck out on is that when they play these doubleheaders against Baltimore later in the season, maybe they would have traded Manny Machado by that point. And Manny Machado just seems to hit home run every time he's up against the Yankees.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't tweet it. The prediction that Tanaka was going to throw a home run ball, but I think I'd say 2/3 of the Yankees Twitterverse and like people watching this game were like, oh, he's definitely going to give up a home run ball right here. And when he went down 2-0 in that count against Manny Machado at the end of that game on Saturday, you knew it was going to be a home run. You just absolutely knew it because Tanaka was throwing the ball over the damn plate. Machado is on he's having a ridiculous year.
18 homers, yeah. And leave it to the Orioles to screw that situation up. They'll hold out. They'll keep him on the roster just to get that draft pick instead of trading away for a bunch of prospects.
Well, if you remember when I had the conversation with their beat writer, she was
ridiculous.
She was like, "No, why would they trade him?" I'm like, "Okay, I'm not gonna have this conversation with you anymore."
Because your rotation is filled with Gosman and Alex Cobb and a bunch of other Chris Tillman trash.
Yeah, has Chris Tillman won a game yet? Is he still in the rotation? He was
no clue.
He had he's just god awful. I don't know how he's getting paid to actually be a major league player.
But let's just talk about Tanaka first, because you had mentioned Tanaka. So the home run ball, I was listening to his post game press conference, and he touched on that he gives up too many home runs. He gave up 3 home runs on Saturday. All of them were solo shots, so I guess that's a positive you could take away from it. But they were all on, they all came on his primary pitches. Fastball to Joey Rickard, slider to Machado, splitter to Adam Jones. They were all mislocation. They were all hangers in the middle of the plate, and he got pummeled. He always says, I got to give up fewer home runs. I've got to be better about that. But that has not changed, and it's not going to change. He's always been a guy who gives up a lot of home runs. Home runs per 9 innings, 2014, 1. 2015, 1.5. 2016, back down to 1. Last year, 1.8. This year, 2.0. I understand home runs across the league are going up, but home runs in Masahiro Tanaka games are also going up, and I don't see that changing.
No, it's part of, lately it's been part of his game, absolutely, because he's not been burying the pitches that he, you know, in the beginning of his career kept down in the zone so consistently. And that's, you're seeing 2014, the lowest number in there is 1, and then he had it back in 16 as well, 1 per 9. But see, the thing is like the Machado home run, as anybody could have predicted it, he probably could have predicted it too, because the Yankees were up at that point. They're going as a 2-0 count, and you know, and there's nobody on base, so you know he throws strikes and tries to attack the hitters. And if someone's over the plate, if the ball's over the plate, and it's a 2-0 count down, when they're leading, like I think he's okay with that at that point. But the problem for me is, on Saturday, if the Yankees were playing a better offense, if they had been up against a team that was more formidable, and I don't know if this changes his mindset and allows him to do different things, but I was watching him throughout the game just leave balls over the plate, hang balls, that were much higher than they needed to be, and guys were just missing them or not swinging at them. I'm like, wow, that ball would have been crushed if it was against, you know, a decent hitter at a point. I mean, we saw what Manny Machado did, but he's just leaving too many balls over the plate when he's not meant to do it, when he's not meaning to do it. And, you know, if he against a subpar team like this, he's not really getting taken down for it. But if he's doing this against better competition, he's going to get rocked. And I know he hasn't lost a game in his last eight starts.
Yeah,
but
that's a fluke.
It's just crazy. You're not seeing you're not seeing good Tanaka. You're really not.
This is when, you know, all the advanced metrics guy was just trash on wins, because he's 5-0 in his last eight games, but his ERA is 4.17. He's given up 14 walks and 10 home runs. By no means has Tanaka pitched great, but his record is great. So obviously we know it's not groundbreaking news. Wins does not always translate to how a pitcher actually looked on the mound. But I think you said jokingly before, damn, if Sonny Gray had this kind of luck, you might
yeah,
be
I'd be
right
well
on
my way to 20 wins. Yeah, this is kind of what I didn't think he would have had to have been perfect. He could have thrown these numbers up and gotten some wins with the offense the way it's going. This is kind of what I thought would happen. But again, when you're going against better teams, this is not going to fly. Those pitches over the plate, when they're leaking over the plate, when they're supposed to be on the outside corner or the inside corner and they're coming back over and guys are able to square them up, when we're in bigger games and against better hitters, they're just not going to work. So, you know, he needs to clean the shit up.
Yeah, and the thing I look at, you look at the replays of the home runs, and like I said, fastball, slider, and splitter, they all came on different pitches. So it's not like, oh, he could just chalk it up to, well, I didn't have my slider tonight and I got beat on my slider. He got beat on all of his primary pitches. And his fastball is not good enough to beat hitters if he misses location. It's just not.
Well, and, you know, he's still doing those motions, the ones I can't stand. Like, I can't stand his antics afterwards where he does, like, his hand motion. Like, oh, I didn't turn it over enough when I released it out of my hand. I'm like, you know what? Just stop doing that. Just stop doing that, because it looks stupid. It looks like you're not prepared. It just looks it's a bad look when you're doing these things after a home run. Like, oh, it wasn't my fault almost.
Do you think,
just can't stand it.
You think that's just one of those, like, maybe it's a nervous tick or maybe
I think
it's
it is
just
a nervous tick. And that – you know what? When you're a pro guy, when you're a professional baseball player and you're supposed to be one of the better pitchers on a team, I need you to get these nervous ticks out of your head. Like, but you can't be that. You can't be the guy that's having nervous ticks after a ball is, you know, leaves your hand and then gets crushed. How about you forget about it and just be better?
So you're on the golf course. You slice a ball into the woods. Do you slam your club down, or do you go, okay, you do the motion, I got to turn my right hand over, I got to turn my right hand over to get a little drawn? Like, what kind of person are you when you screw up at something?
I use my full name and I scream at myself.
Okay, so Tanaka's not that type of person. We see other guys will scream into their glove or do something like that.
Yeah, that's what I want to see. I want to see visible frustration. I don't want to see...
Why?
Because I want to see it, because it's passion, and I'm not seeing it. I'm seeing a guy that doesn't look like he cares that much, and it pisses me off.
Oh, see, if he was...
And I'm not a professional golfer. He's a professional baseball player. I've played twice in the past year and a half. Like, yeah, I get pissed off when I hit, but, you know, because I suck. But he's a professional baseball player on the New York Yankees. Fix your shit.
Mm-hmm.
God.
I just think that we're looking at that's something that annoys you, but I just think that is how Tanaka deals with frustration.
Yes, I know that. And it's not just him. It's anybody who really shows visible like not anger frustration, but like just like whiny frustration. That's kind of what it is to me. It's like a little whiny frustration. Like, oh, I didn't turn it over enough. Like, you know, I just can't handle that.
I love it up. The very rare times that Severino gets beat, because he doesn't get beat much. I kind of love it. He's almost like has a grin on his face. Like, I'm not going to let that happen again.
See, I like that. That's confidence. There's confidence behind what he's doing. And, you know, there's a big difference. There's a big difference in the way that you can attack things. And I know it's personalities, and different personalities are different. Doesn't mean it doesn't bother me. But you can see that he has a lot of confidence in his stuff. And like you said, if he smiles something off or says, you know, that ain't going to happen again, it just shows you how much confidence he has to forget about it and attack the next guy and be better with the next guy.
Sonny Gray looked decent on Friday. Two out of his last three games have been good. One against the on pace to lose 100 games Kansas City Royals, and then another one on pace to lose 100 games Baltimore Orioles. And the one that he looked bad at was Saturday night BP outing against the Angels, and Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani, lights, camera, action. Sonny Gray couldn't pitch well in that game, but, you know, he pitched well on the road against two crummy teams.
Yeah, I mean, the same crummy teams. Kansas City gave Severino a little trouble, and obviously we saw Baltimore give to knock a little bit of trouble. So
I know.
These guys can hit sometimes, but
I'm just being a dick.
The bottom line is that we just had to see some good things, and we're talking about confidence and like things like that. That's Sonny Gray looked confident. He looked mm-hmm. like there was a little bit more giddy up on that fastball. It looked like it was popping out of his hand, and I think that's what we saw in Kansas City. You know, I don't know if this is a thing where he's more comfortable on the road. Seems like it is, where he could go away and just be more comfortable.
Well, that's
when
concerning.
He's on the away. It is concerning, but it seems like he is more comfortable on the road.
The one thing, obviously, that jumped out looking at his line is zero walks. That's right. Huge.
That is huge. And when you're controlling the strike zone and you're Sonny Gray and you're attacking the strike zone, you're going to have good things happen. I mean, that's when we see him get into trouble. We see him get into trouble when he gets behind in the count, when he is walking guys, he gets runners on by the walk. Like, that's when he starts getting into trouble and getting in his own head and not executing pitches. The ball starts running over the plate. You know, all these things that we know that he's done when he struggles, a lot of it stems and starts because he is down in the count and he's not controlling his pitches. If Sonny Gray could control his pitches, he's got so many different pitches that he throws for different speeds and different angles and such. He could be absolutely nasty, but he's got to control them. And, you know, he'd look like a confident guy.
Yeah, and just look at the difference in the two outings. Against the Angels, he threw 86 pitches. He gave... basically four free passes because he hit a batter and walked three, and he only lasted 3 2/3 innings. And then Friday, 90 pitches, so essentially the same number of pitches, but no free passes. So that is, if we're just talking about very base level black and white here with Sonny Gray, don't beat yourself. It sounds so simple, but that's where Sonny Gray needs to be. That needs to be his mentality right now. It's just, how do I take baby steps here? Keep this shit simple and build on it. And that's the first thing he needs to concentrate every game. Don't beat myself.
And for the Friday night game when he was pitching, you know, Machado's the guy who hit the home run. I mean, you tip your cap at that point. He's one of the best players in the league, and he hit a solo shot. You were still attacking him, but he got the bat on the ball. Nothing hurt. 1-0. It's fine. You move on. And that's exactly what he did. So I thought it was a big step for him just to say, okay, that's it. You know, recognize what just happened. He may have made a good pitch, but Machado put a better swing on it. And he's the type of guy that can beat you. And if you know that and just tip your cap and then move on, you can still have a very good outing. And that's exactly what he did. So, you know, look, we just need to see. It's hard to get excited because you're just waiting for kind of the next thing. And it seems like every other start has been bad. So, you know, I think if he follows up another start with something of quality, then we can get closer to saying, okay, maybe Sonny is starting to get back here.
How close do you think Boone was getting to tossing away the personal catcher thing? Like, say Sonny Gray had gone out there against Baltimore and gotten shelled like he did against Anaheim. Do you think he would have tossed the whole Romine personal catcher thing away?
I don't know. I don't know what the leash is on that situation. Because if they're both talking about it and everybody keeps saying his stuff is good, his stuff is good, his stuff is good, his stuff is good. And you know, if his stuff is still good and he's just having either bad luck or he's just not, you know, whatever is happening, but he's still throwing well from what they think to Romine, then, you know, I don't know if they're going to change it. As a fan, when you're looking at it, you know, when you see these every other start's a bad start, like why is it better with Romine? I don't get it. That what makes everything easier right now is that Romine is hitting the ball very well.
So we have a mailbag question, one of the hottest takes we've ever received to the podcast mailbag. So it's a little tease for you. But I was actually listening. Flaherty was talking after the game about personal catchers, and because he was Randy Johnson's personal catcher, and he brought up something interesting. He said Posada actually, once he got over the fact that okay, this is the reality, he liked the fact that it was that. He knew when his day off was going to be because he could plan his workouts and he could mentally just prepare. I'm going to be off when Randy Johnson's pitching. I don't have to worry about looking at the lineup. It's a different angle to the whole personal catcher thing that we didn't really consider.
Yeah, no, I think that's relatively valid. If you as a catcher and you finally are at that point where you're like, okay, this is a reality. So, hey, let's look at the good part. I can schedule my day off now, you know, massage on this day. So, you know, there's different things you can look at, but as a competitor, as the starting catcher of the Yankees, you want to have control of your guys. You want to be the guy that they're going to throw to. Like that's a deal. That's a big deal. The battery is an important thing because what's going to happen, and we've talked about this a million times, but what happens if there's such a comfort level at that point and you're in the game four of an ALCS and Sonny Gray's pitching? You're not going to have Gary Sanchez in the lineup. You're not going to have your best lineup in there because Alistair Romine has to catch him. Like, that's where the problems start happening, is when you have really big games and you got to leave a bat out. And in particular with this, because Gary Sanchez is such a valuable bat at catcher,
we're not talking
you can
about
have other guys in there.
We're not talking about your average starting catcher offensively. I mean,
right.
I understand Gary Sanchez is struggling, but he's a beast. And when he is not struggling, he's one of the best offensive players in the game. So that's what you're talking about losing out of your lineup.
Absolutely.
But they did it in 09 with Burnett. Molina caught Burnett in the playoffs.
So my point is...
And the drop-off between Posada to Molina was like a million-mile gap. So they did it.
There's also a big difference between the two of them at that point in their career defensively. I mean, defensively, you're looking at Molina was a damn good defensive catcher and could throw runners out very well. I understand that it could work and it has worked in the past. You just don't want to be put in a predicament where let's say you're going up against a really hard lefty at that point and you need all the right-handed bats in the lineup. And you have to have Romine in instead of Gary Sanchez. Like, that's a big deal.
That's why I think Boone and the Yankees should make it a point to sprinkle in a handful of Gary Sanchez starts with Sonny Gray through the rest of the season. Maybe not now. Get him on a roll first. His next game's going to be on the road in Toronto. He's scheduled to pitch, I believe, Wednesday in Toronto. You're going to have Austin Romine catching him. But say he builds on this start and has a good June, I think you got to go back to Gary Sanchez a couple times throughout the rest of the season. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. I think they're just trying to be, at this point, they're trying to fix Sonny. That's the bottom line. Like, number one
priority
right
now. That's the biggest
issue
right now.
Is fix Sonny Gray. Once Sonny Gray gets back and rolling, and it's got to be a few starts, you know, there's got to be a relatively significant gap or time frame, I think, when he's back. So that you can't, if he does go out there and throw, a bad outing to Gary Sanchez the one time he does, that he can use that as an excuse. Like, you don't want that situation to occur at the same time. So it is a delicate situation. And the longer it goes, it becomes just more complicated, I guess. It's complicated. It's a complicated relationship.
And I realize we spend a lot of time each episode on Sonny Gray, but I think that's because of how important he is to how far this team goes this season and what they do at the trade deadline. Because if Sonny Gray can get back to what they expect Sonny Gray to be, that totally changes, first of all, what they have to do at the trade deadline and then what this team is in October.
I mean, he's such an important cog in this team because the biggest weakness, everybody knows it. It's not a secret. Everybody knows the biggest weakness on this team is the starting pitching. Throw away Severino because we know what he is. He's a dominant ace. We got one. Everybody else after that is kind of an unknown. We don't really know what we're going to get from CeCe on a given basis. He could, you know, get an injury and be gone for the season at any point. He's you know, with his age and knees, and just he could also fall off a cliff with his, you know, athletic abilities. Like, all these things can happen. Tanaka has been very inconsistent. Is he going to bounce back and have the very good, you know, closing second half of the year that he did last year? Sonny Gray is such an important part because when he came over, when they made this trade, they were expecting him to be one of the definitive parts of this rotation. And he's supposed to be that number two guy. No doubt about it. He's supposed to be that guy that they can rely on. At least two guys that they can rely on. And when he's not there, there's so much in flux now. But yes, you're right. If he comes back and he's starting to throw the way he's capable of, and it's the guy that they thought they were getting, totally changes the dynamic of how you look at the starting pitching.
Right, and they still need to get a pitcher. Even if Sonny Gray turns back into 2015 Sonny Gray, they're still going to get a pitcher.
Yeah.
But it changes what level of pitcher I think they might need to get and how desperate they are to get that pitcher. Because they could say, we don't need to be desperate anymore and give up our top prospects. We can play a little. We can have the upper hand instead of the other team have the upper hand at the trade deadline.
Yeah, and I mean, you got to believe the Yankees are going to have some decent leverage no matter what, just because of the amount of talent that they do have. You know, they're going to be able to.
Well, see, I actually think that gives them. Well,
they,
I guess it depends
more.
How you look at it.
Yeah,
they can offer more.
Absolutely.
But,
I see what you're saying. I know what you're about to say. You're about to say that everybody knows they have big talent, can't sign them all, so they have to get rid of some people.
Right.
And could go out there. I mean, yes, that's true. But at the same time, they have more talent than anybody. The depth in the farm system still, which is unreal and really a true testament to what they've done over the past 5 years. But it's so deep that they have. You know, a lot of flexibility in what they can do. And yes, they do have to move some guys at some point, But, you know, I think Brian Cashman is in a point where he can probably offer more than most guys, even if it's not their best offer.
Yeah, I think the Yankees are in an unbelievable position at the deadline. And just look what they gave up last year for Sonny Gray. Three guys in the top 15 in their system. And yep. Their system is still very, very strong. Still in the top five as far as like MLB pipeline is concerned. Yeah. Most systems could not handle that. You lose three guys out of your top 15, that's going to be a big hit. Not for how this system was set up.
No, and I mean, you look around the infield too, and you have, there's a lot of young talent on the major league roster. So what does that do to the minor leaguers? Well, there's definitely some blocks here and some guys that are not going to be able to move much further. So there's very obvious situations now where the Yankees have to make some moves.
I found it interesting that Buck Showalter found it in his cold, dead, miserable heart to compliment the Yankees manager Aaron Boone. He said, "Look at the American League leaders in games pitched, and you won't see any Yankees. That's the sign of a well-managed bullpen." So Chapman, 24 games, 24.1 innings. Betances, 23 games, 25 innings. Green, 23 games, 28 innings. D-Rob, 27 games, that's the most, 26 and two-thirds innings. And then Holder, 17 games, 19 innings pitched. We did criticize Boone at the start of the season, less for how he was distributing work and just why he was giving high-leverage spots to certain guys. But as the sample size has grown, we're two-plus months into the season, he has done a good job. Clearly, that's part of what he was brought in here to do. I'm sure a lot of this is not just Aaron Boone. It's the analytics department and the front office behind him giving him stuff to work with, but he's distributed the workload.
Well, you know, it's funny because the reason that people were getting all over him, and you say giving certain guys high leverage situations.
Jonathan Holder.
Those certain guys were one guy, and his name was Jonathan Holder. Yeah. So he saw the talent, and we know what he saw out of spring training. He saw a guy that could contribute. Struggled out of the gate, 100%. But came back and he's been like phenomenal.
He's been one of their best relief pitchers probably for the last month.
So I, you know, when you're looking at that, I think we need to go back in time and actually credit Boone with a little bit of that golden eye.
Well,
and
no, see the because
he saw the talent out of spring training.
But he also saw that a guy struggled his last two outings in a row. Why then use him in the eighth inning of a one-run ball game? That makes no sense. So
he had a lot of confidence in this guy and liked his stuff and liked the ability of the kid and trying to get the confidence of the kid. And that's something we talked about in the beginning of the season. There's a situation also that Boone is in where he's also got to, you know, throw his confidence behind guys. And he's a new manager on a new team, on a young team, and a new manager, period. So he's got to show these guys that even if they struggle a little bit, he's going to go back to them and show that he has belief in them. Because what does that do? That gives confidence to that guy and shows him that, hey, your manager has confidence in you each time you go out there. And if your name is called, he expects you to do a good job. So I get it. Like, I understand the part. But the fact is that he did see this talent early on. He and Rothschild and whomever else was in the room talking about the bullpen and these guys. And, you know, it's paid off because he's really come about and stepped up when the Yankees have absolutely needed him, when all these injuries happen. So it's a big deal for Jonathan Holder to be where he is right now.
And with Warren returning soon, Canely recently returned, that should be able to help even spread out the workload even more.
Yeah. So the debate that you and I were talking about beforehand, like where's the difference here when you're talking about what Buck Showalter said, saying it's well managed because you're seeing none of the guys at the top for games pitched, but some of these guys are also throwing more innings. And that was also one of the early things that we had to kind of get used to with Aaron Boone. He's definitely letting his guys go longer, especially Dellin Betances. He's been going into the second inning more often, and the second inning has been a disaster practically every time. So now that these other guys are coming back, maybe we'll get back to Betances at one inning, and, you know, maybe then we can throw in Canely or throw in Warren or Holder for at this point. So it's, maybe we're scaling things back a little bit too.
Right. It's an interesting way to look at it. Like, a lot of times you would just look at how many innings did the guy pitch? Did he get overworked because how many innings? But maybe for relief pitchers, it's less about innings and more about how many days do you have to get up and throw?
Yeah, and if you're throwing, kind of goes back to BWIPs.
Yeah, it does. If you're throwing less days but the same amount of innings or even more innings, maybe that's less stress on your arm than throwing every day, every, you know, 4 out of 5 days or whatever it is.
Yeah. No, I mean, it very well could be. I think when you get up and you start the process of getting warm and doing all the stretching and then really getting your body going to come into a game, whether you come into a game or not, that process is taxing. So I do think that there's more to that. It's, you know, starting the engine, stopping the engine, starting the engine, stopping the engines. I think that definitely plays a role.
Doubleheader in Detroit on Monday in a couple hours, as you guys are listening to this, does not look like rain's in the forecast, so that's good, knock on wood. The rainout on Sunday actually helps the Yankees pitching situation because they get to go Severino game one, Herman game two. Boone had talked to Francesa last week on the radio and said they were going to plan on calling up someone from Scranton to make that start. Did not name who it was. David Hale was the guy who lined up. I was thinking maybe Josh Rogers because Rogers has pitched really well. Both of those guys would have had to been added to the 40-man roster, but I guess we'll never know now that they don't need to do it.
Yeah, no, it helps, I think, with the roster management at least, and we don't have to see David Hale come up again. Right. That's positive.
Detroit's second in their division, but they're under 500. So that just goes back to the thing earlier we were talking about. The American League has a lot of crappy teams.
Yeah, the American League Central is the dogfight for who's going to stay above 500 the longest. It's the Indians.
Well, you got to imagine the Indians will pull away this summer. I mean, they're too talented not to.
Yeah, absolutely. I think at some point the Indians are definitely going to you know, hit a streak. I mean, what was the freaking ridiculous streak last year? And that very well could have skewed, you know, that long streak, you know, what they look like at the end.
Yeah, but they're, World Series the year before that. I mean, shit.
They're a good team. Bottom line, they're a good team.
They could win 81, 82 games and probably win that division, but I still think they're going to win 90 games.
Yeah, I think so too. I think they will definitely hit a streak and start playing well. But yeah, it's a struggling team or a struggling division for sure.
Then the Yankees go to Toronto for two games. Sabathia and Sonny are lined up to pitch those games. The Blue Jays, and I remember when we talked to Arden Zwelling, who has a podcast up for the Blue Jays in our pregame, preseason stuff, he was talking about how the Blue Jays rotation was going to have to carry them, and it hasn't. They're 25th in team ERA with 4.78.
Yeah, that's not good. I mean, you need those guys, the Aaron Sanchez, Stroman's, you needed those guys to have good seasons in order for that team to do well. They kind of had a mishmash of offensive add-ons in the offseason, and, you know, they lost some guys too. So Tulowitzki is he even playing? I don't even know. If he is, he's a shell of himself. The guy is just forever injured, it seems like, at this point. So their offense is just not the same, and obviously their pitching is not the same either. No.
Quick thing before we get on to mailbags and stuff. MLB draft starts on Monday. I'm not even going to pretend to talk about guys in the draft, college baseball players, because I don't know anything about it. It'll be interesting to see who the Yankees take, what position they take. I know they've drafted a lot of pitchers early on in the round. They drafted Clark Schmidt, who actually we talked to on the podcast last June. So if you guys missed that, I know we have a lot of new listeners since then. Go back to last June, check it out. We did like 15 minutes with Clark Schmidt. Maybe we'll try and get whoever the Yankees draft again on the show. But I'm sure, you know, next episode we'll talk about who the Yankees picked.
Yeah, we'll figure out who these guys are.
Right. That's the big thing. You want to give away a t-shirt?
Yeah, let's do it. So we said that we were going to give away some t-shirts in the ratings and reviews. It's been a few weeks, so got one here. And again, thanks guys for rating and reviewing the podcast. Again, you know, it does help us out like tremendously. This is one of the big reasons or big ways that you can help us. One is tell everybody you know who's a Yankees fan to come listen to us. That's important because a nice little referral definitely helps guys get onto some shows. But rating and reviewing us in iTunes is big because that's how we get bumped up and stay up in the rankings for the top 100 in sports and recreation, which we definitely are in quite a bit. So again, really do appreciate it. It does help us out and we see them all. So thanks guys. This one is from I am Gus226. He says, I used to listen to Francesa for my New York sports. Then he retired and I needed another way to hear about the Yankees. Even though Mike's retirement was shorter than a sunny gray outing, I continue to listen to these guys multiple times every week. They give great hot takes and have built a rapport only matched by John and Susan. He says, I will leave it up to you guys to say which one is Susan in the relationship. Oh my God. Then he called me Susan.
Yep. Yeah, he did.
Son of a bitch.
Hashtag Scott is Susan.
I didn't even see that until I read it.
Oh, I knew it was there and I was just waiting for you to read it.
That's great. Susan's a wonderful lady.
Yeah, I love John and Susan.
John can't. I mean, you know what Susan is? She's the brains and the eyes of the whole operation.
Oh well, she's certainly the eyes. I don't know about the brains.
Oh yeah, she's certainly the brains and the eyes of the operation. John Sterling is like a mere puppet at this point.
Thank you, Gus, or whatever your actual name is. DM us or contact us on Facebook. Prove that you left that review, and we will get you a t-shirt. All right, guys. If you're someone who struggles to sleep at a comfortable temperature, the all-new Dual Temp individual layer is the innovation you've been waiting for, and I'm talking about Sleep Number beds here. Cooler or warmer, you decide. Just add the Dual Temp layer to either side of the bed and sleep up to 35% cooler or warmer. The Dual Temp layer can be added to any mattress brand. It doesn't have to be a Sleep Number bed. Select from temperature levels at the touch of a button. Finally, the blissful cooling comfort you deserve at a comfortable price. Come in and feel the temperature difference for yourself. With summer coming up, it's hot and humid. It's getting hot and humid in New York, so definitely need to cool down the bed. You'll only find the Dual Temp layer at sleepnumber.com or any of the 550 Sleep Number stores nationwide. Visit sleepnumber.com/Bronx to find a store near you. Again, sleepnumber.com/Bronx. Let's get to some mailbags. First one up is Nico. What would you guys think of Warren as the fifth starter until Montgomery is back? This allows Herman to be used as a long man out of the pen in shorter bursts where he seems to be more effective. A quick, before you answer, Scott, about Warren. So he was with the Yankees in Baltimore, obviously not activated. He expects to be activated very soon. He made a short rehab in the minors. I believe he threw 8 innings in the minors.
So it's interesting because we were actually going to talk about this last show. We were you and I were talking either before or after we recorded about Adam Warren and, you know, how they potentially could use him. And I think Nico has a decent point here with the fact that they could use Warren as a starter at some point. I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon. And the reason I say this is because, one, Herman pitched, I think, one of his better games the last game out. And while the total results weren't there, if you look at the way that he threw and you broke down the actual, just everything he did on that day, he actually looked really good and had some bad luck. So I don't think they're going to give up on Herman at that point. Adam Warren is coming back from an injury. I could see them stretching him out and being that long guy.
But wouldn't they do that in the minors?
They would do that in the minors. So, and that's the reason why I don't think immediately that's going to happen. I think that he could, stretch out at some point, but I don't think they're going to, I think from now, right now, the way it's going to happen is Herman's going to be the guy until Montgomery comes back. And if Montgomery, for whatever reason, hits a, something on his recovery that doesn't go right and he's takes longer, then I could see them trying to make a move. But, we're in June. The trade deadline is, looming in next month. You never know when a trade can drop. So I wouldn't, if we saw something with Montgomery happen or, extend, if he wasn't going to come back, I wouldn't be surprised if the Yankees made an earlier move too.
Yeah, you kind of touched on it with Herman. One stat that stands out is his whiff percentage. So basically how many swings and misses does he get? He's at a 34% clip, which is fourth among starting pitchers who have thrown at least 200 pitches. Fourth.
Yeah. And his last start, actually the one he lost, was I think one of the better starts on the season. He got a lot of swing and misses.
Right. And so that means his stuff plays. So the results might not be there.
Is Sonny listening to this? Because that actually does translate into good stuff. Hey, your stuff is good when people swing and miss. That's good stuff. I like it. That's a really good way to determine if you have good stuff on a given day.
Some might say toolsy. Is he toolsy?
Yeah. Yeah, toolsy guy. I love it. Lots of swings and misses.
Right, but I think what we're seeing with Herman is a guy whose stuff plays in the major leagues, but is a rookie, and he's going to get himself into trouble like we saw in the two starts prior to the last one, which was decent. Last one was against Houston. It was decent. The two before that, I know one was against Texas, and I can't remember who the other one was against. But he got himself into trouble, and he just could not dig himself out. He gave up 6 runs in each of them. But when you pitch against the Astros and can get the kind of swings and misses that he got, it shows potential. Yeah. So I understand he's not been great. His overall line does not look great. But I think what the Yankees are looking at is the swings and misses. The stuff is there. We're not giving up on him.
Exactly. I mean, you could look back. If you want to see a guy that was getting swings and misses but also would not have very good lines and would get into some trouble and people wanted to throw back in the bullpen, circle Luis Severino, our number one guy. I mean, when their stuff is different, they're different types of pitchers. But, he was a young guy that had to really build that confidence up and figure out who he was as a starting pitcher. And I think Hermano's doing that too. I think there's going to be a level of, and I think now because Montgomery's injury happened, he does have a leash to figure this out. And I do believe that the Yankees like him as a pitcher. So, you know, this is a guy that could potentially, you know, level up his game. He's got the potential to do it. When you see those numbers, that 34%, like, that's extremely telling. So if you can add some consistency to that and actually start, you know, putting those out with more of a consistent level on each individual start, then you have a very, very good starting pitcher. And the biggest weakness, like we discussed earlier in this team, is the starting pitching. So if you have a guy that's potentially on the cusp of being very good and improving the worst part of your team, you stick with him.
You want to know the three pitchers ahead of him? Max Scherzer.
Be big numbers, big names, I bet.
Max Scherzer, number one. Do you think he's a good pitcher?
He's pretty good, yeah.
Maybe the best pitcher in baseball.
Love the way he wears his emotion on his sleeve.
Yeah, Robbie Ray for Arizona.
Okay.
And then Shohei Ohtani.
All right, well, there you go.
But in the top 10, you got Patrick Corbin, Chris Sale, Jacob DeGrom, Garrett Cole. Syndergaard's number 11, so big names up there getting swings and misses.
It means something. It's actually a very good stat to be high in the rankings. It's a good stat, and I think what we've seen is just inconsistencies with him. And you know, once he smooths that stuff out, if he can do that, then he could be a very good starting pitcher.
Do you think the Yankees would ever entertain the opener, like what the Rays are doing with their bullpen, with Adam Warren or maybe some other guy? And then, as Nico said, use Herman in the third through sixth innings or third through seventh innings?
You know, the problem with that is that there's so many other guys in this rotation right now that are not going deep into games. If you're going a bullpen day, then you may be taxing your bullpen big time for, you know, one of these other starts where these guys are going five innings or,
Day, because you know Herman's going to pitch. But what you're doing is, the theory is, say you're facing the Red Sox and you've got Mookie Betts and Xander Bogaerts and a bunch of right-handed hitters at the top of the order in the first inning. You want to use someone who can neutralize them. And who knows, maybe it is Herman. I got to look at his splits. But you understand what I'm saying? Like, you can bring in a big righty there to get those outs.
Yeah, I get you. You're channeling your inner Brian Kenny. I know what's happening here. I don't like it. I'm not a fan of this whole thing. Sure. I think different guys, when they're in different situations, also pitch differently. You know, I think there is something to a guy coming in at a specific, like a normal time. It doesn't have to be the same inning every time. But just the way that they get ready, the way that they're doing things throughout a game, like, I think all that stuff does matter to some extent. So I'm not a big fan of it. And maybe it's just me being old-fashioned and not liking the optics of it, because I don't like that either. Mm-hmm. But I do think at some point it does affect the way that guys prepare.
All right, what's up next?
Next is from Aaron. He's at Aaron, E-R-O-N underscore P-W-P. With Sonny Gray's good start this week and his frequent inconsistency, in your opinions, what kind of numbers does he need to have at the end of the year that would make you feel comfortable with Gray's pitching in the postseason? Or is that too far gone at this point?
So first of all, I want to compare Sonny Gray through June 1st of this year and Tanaka through June 1st of last year. So Sonny Gray this year, 11 starts, 55.2 innings, 5.50 ERA, 272 batting average against, 28 walks, which is horrendous, 7 home runs. Tanaka last year was actually worse somehow than Sonny Gray has been this year. The 11 starts as well, 61 innings, 6.34 ERA, holy shit, 302 batting average against, 17 walks and 14 home runs allowed. And Tanaka was able to turn the season around. He pitched well June, July, August, and September, and then really pitch well in October. So it's less about what Sonny Gray's final numbers look like at the end of the year and more about how does he look in the second half of the season.
Yeah, absolutely. 100% agree. It's all about how he rebounds from this slow start. And you're looking at those numbers and they're pretty close, actually. They're pretty comparable. I mean, I think the biggest glaring difference is the walks with Sonny Gray and then the home runs with Tanaka. And those home runs seem like they were coming every other pitch with Tanaka.
All against the Astros.
Oh, yeah, on Derek Jeter Day. Way to ruin everything, Tanaka. But the fact that Sonny Gray, you know, if he could put more together, Again, you got to go back to the track record. I mean, that's at this point, what you have to look at is what has he done in the past? Who is this guy? Who do we think he is? What can he be? So I'm not going to look at the end of the year numbers to know and for my comfort level and how well he'll pitch in October. I got to see how he's pitching in August and September and leading up to that. You know, if he's back at that point and he's the guy that, you know, that David Ortiz couldn't talk enough about being one of the nastiest pitchers in the American League, then I'll feel very comfortable with him going out there. But you know, what have you done for me lately? That's the biggest thing with these pitchers.
And if he doesn't, if he's pitching to a 5.50 ERA in September, well, breaks. Guess what? He's not getting any starts in the playoffs. He's probably not even in the rotation anymore if he's still pitching to a 5.50 ERA.
No, hit bricks at that kid. I mean, if he continues this, he needs to really step it up. He needs to start being the guy that everybody thinks he can be. So actually, I don't even think anybody thinks he can be anything anymore. I might be alone on an island at this point.
No, I'm not giving up on him.
No, I know, but a lot of people already have so totally written them off.
They're the same people who are giving up on Stan.
I mean, the fact to me that's a ludicrous thing. I mean, you look at Stanton's numbers, and yeah, you watch the games, and some of his at bats have been terrible. He's still been productive. He's still hitting like what 250. He's not having the worst season. He still has a whole bunch of home runs and a bunch of RBIs. Like the guy is actually productive still, even though he has looked terrible. So what's going to happen when he does start getting hot? I mean, his numbers are going to be ridiculous. But yeah. You can't give up on Sonny Gray at this point because we're seeing glimpses of a good pitcher. And when you see that, then you're like, okay, well, he's there somewhere. Can we just get him out all the time now?
Right. Next up is from Ryan. He says, Glaber ran out of his shoe trying to get a triple. What's the worst piece of equipment or clothing to lose while trying to run the bases?
Yeah, I'd say a shoe is pretty bad. You lose a cleat when you're running around bases where cleats are actually helpful. I'd say that's one of the top things that you could lose that would affect what you're doing.
Jock strap. Cup. I mean, it just flies out. Hits you in the face.
I guess, but that would be really hard to do. I don't even know how it would
happen.
Your
jock strap, you're just sprinting so hard around second base.
Who the hell wears a jock strap anymore?
Your jock strap.
This isn't 1975.
I don't know. What do they wear?
They wear. They're like briefs at this point.
Yeah,
those things don't.
Oh
snap
yeah, I think
off.
that's what I did wear in high school. Now that I think about it,
dude, jock straps haven't been worn in a very long time.
Yeah, I haven't worn a cup since high school. So
yeah, I mean, I wear a cup every time I play softball still because I'm not trying to get hit in the nuts on bad,
very smart
fields
of you.
Playing softball. Yeah, absolutely. I'm not stupid.
You don't
want
to take. You don't want to take a bad hop at third base or
no.
off a rock or something.
No
right
hell
to the
no.
Brain.
We don't have Yankee Stadium groomed fields at softballs. At softball fields in adult softball, it just doesn't happen that way. There are rocks everywhere. So yeah, I'm wearing a cup.
Can we also mention though that was bad base running by Glaber?
It was terrible. I mean, look, first of all, I know a lot of people were looking at it and he bobbled the ball. Like, that's fine. I see what you're trying to do there, and you're trying to say that he can take advantage of that. One, he did not have any, like, the turnaround first was bad. The turnaround second was bad. There were choppy steps. He just didn't have a good base path at that point, and he should never have tried to do that. There were no outs. Again, like, it's funny because I tweeted this about if that was anybody else who did that, they would have been murdered on Twitter. Absolutely destroyed on Twitter. If that was Aaron Hicks, people would just be telling them to send him down, trade him for a bag of balls. But because it was Gleyber Torres, because it's, you know, the young kid that everybody loves, everybody's like, all right, he's just being aggressive.
I was going to say they wouldn't kill Aaron Judge, but then I realized Aaron Judge wouldn't have made that base running mistake.
Judge is the other guy that nobody would have killed. Yeah.
But he would have stayed at second.
Yeah.
Glaber was also hit in the wrist, looked ugly at first, but he stayed in the game and actually probably, I bet he would have not been in the lineup on Sunday if I had to guess, but the day off probably helps him.
Yeah, not a bad thing. I mean, when you see what happened and the fact that he did stay in the game, you're thanking your lucky stars at that point.
All right. What's up next?
Next is from Chocolate Thunder at Nerdy McGurdy. I have always had this inkling that the Yanks will trade Stanton after the season to the Dodgers and sign either Harper or Machado. Do you think this is a realistic possibility? Stanton, Sanchez, and Judge are all similar players, and I feel like the Yankees would prefer Harper and Machado.
I can tell by the inflection in your voice you don't like this one.
Nah, I'm just sick of hearing about these things. It's look, no, that's not going to happen. They're not going to trade Stanton. Again, I think the struggles of Stanton, look at his production, look at the numbers. They're actually not that bad. They're actually pretty damn productive. yes, when we watch him, it's frustrating and sometimes painful because of the way that he looks when he swings a bat, first off.
Yeah.
And then he looks lost at some points. That's it. Can't make it. But you know what? The numbers are still there.
So the reason I wanted to do this one is because he says Stanton, Sanchez, and Judge are all similar players, and I actually disagree with that. Especially Judge and Stanton. We thought the same thing all winter. We were saying similar players, they can feed off one another, they can help each other with their batting stance, and they can talk about how pitchers are attacking them, blah, blah, blah. But don't you just watching them every day now for 2+ months, the consistency in Judge's at bats are so much at a so much higher level than Stanton's. And maybe that's just Stanton hasn't got going yet, but Judge is walking at a 17.6% rate, which is outrageous. Stanton's only walking at an 8.6% rate. I understand their strikeout percentages are similar and all that stuff, but Judge's patience at the plate, he's never out of his mentality. He's going to take the pitches. He's making the pitcher work. Sometimes Stanton goes up there, swings at the, he's in swing mode, slider in the dirt, he's going to swing at it no matter what. We don't see that out of Judge.
No, we don't. I think they're, you know, with their mindset and the way that they approach the, you know, a given at bat, they're different. I still think there's the obvious comparables in the size and the way that the strike zone is and all these things, but their swings are totally different. They're totally different. Their stances are totally different. So there are a lot of very big differences. Yes, they're same sizes-ish, but the way that they approach things are very different. And you know what? Like, even the way that Gary Sanchez approaches things, I think are very different compared to Stanton. I think there's still a, when Gary Sanchez is on, like, he's one of the better pure hitters. If he's staying in his strike zone, he could put bat to ball at any point. Stanton can't do that. Stanton just can't do that. It seems like he has real struggles getting contact with certain pitches. And, you know, Sanchez, when he's going, is not that kind of guy.
Well, that's actually a perfect segue. Last mailbag question. John from Rome, upstate New York. I think Romine should be given the opportunity to be the starting catcher. His numbers are looking a lot better than Sanchez's.
This is adorable. This is funny. This is, you know, look, I mean, again, talk about what have you done for me lately. But yes, Austin Romine is much better than, he's really improved his offense. Like, you got to give a lot of credit to Austin Romine for improving his offense. It's a big deal because he can now be, you know, right now he is a good offensive player right now. I mean, he's going up there having some good at-bats and he's doing very well, and you're getting some good defense out of him. So it's a huge deal. They're not remotely close to the same caliber of offensive player, though. Not even close.
So people are just overreacting to a hot streak here. 10-game hitting streak, he's slashing .483, .545, .931. So if you tell me that Austin Romine is that player for the rest of the season, then yes, he should be the starting catcher. But he's not. And even Aaron Boone knows he's not, because he was asked the question before one of the games the other days and talking about how he challenged Austin Romine before in spring training to be a better offensive player. And that's a great story. Romine ran with it and the confidence and blah, blah, blah. And one of the reporters said, but did you really expect this from Romine? And Boone paused and was like, we don't know what this is. He's hot right now and that's great. And he's really staying within himself and he's made adjustments. But it's 30 plate appearances. And it's 30 plate appearances for Sanchez the other way, slashing .069, .206, .069. So we're going to make a decision over 30 plate appearances? Like, come on.
You just can't do that. You just absolutely can't do that. And I think what people have to do, and they're making this comparable shouldn't even be happening. It's not fair. It's not a fair comparison. What people should be doing right now is just praising Austin Romine for upping his game to a point where now he is not a liability at the plate. I wouldn't say he was a liability before, but he's definitely really improved. Like, he deserves a lot of credit. He doesn't need to be in this conversation of who's better, him or Gary Sanchez, because even Austin Romine would tell you 100 times that he's not even remotely close to the offensive player that Gary Sanchez is. So it's not even fair to go in there and say something like this. You know, it's just, there needs to be just credit for what Romine is doing. And, you know, we've seen hot streaks before. We've seen these guys go off and just go absolutely nuts. Pretty sure Shelly Duncan hit a whole lot of home runs for the New York Yankees. You know, like, this, there are people that can get hot in short amount of time, and then their true colors do come out at some point. Not right. Saying that Austin Romine's going to fall off a cliff. He's definitely better, but he's not this.
No, and Gary Sanchez isn't .069 hitter.
Right.
We
find
know
the
this.
Mean. Find right. the mean.
All right, guys, thank you. And sorry we were hard on you, John, but that's one of the more hot takes that we've ever received. Had to call it out. So thanks, guys, for the mailbag questions. If you want to submit yours, it's bronxpinstripes.com/podcast is where you can submit the form, or you can tweet us at Yankees Podcast and join the Facebook group, The Bronx Pinstripe Show, where you can post questions and discussion during the games. Scott, you thought I was going to let you get out of here without wishing you a happy birthday. I know it's in a couple days before our next episode. So happy birthday. Everybody go wish Scott a happy birthday on Twitter. Any last words, birthday boy?
No, the fact that I forgot that it was my birthday. I submit to Mother Nature. We give up. We understand your power. We get it. Please, just let us play baseball. Just let us play baseball.
Good stuff. We'll talk to you guys in a few days.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.